Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, June 20th. Abbott's anti-Semitism order spurs action. Midland College Board reviews free speech and discrimination policies, confirms compliance with state mandate. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Midland College discussed and confirmed its policies on anti-Semitism on campus per an executive order from Governor Greg Abbott. The governor signed Executive Order GA-44 in March. It cites the October 7th attack in Israel by Hamas. The order says it is relating to addressing acts of anti-Semitism in institutions of higher education. Midland College and other state community colleges were not positive if the executive order applied to them or just universities, but after further research, it was found to apply to Texas community colleges. The order directs all Texas higher education institutions to review and update free speech policies to address the sharp rise in anti-Semitic speech and acts on university campuses, and establish appropriate punishments, including expulsion from the institution. Ensure that these policies are being enforced on campuses and that groups such as the Palestine Solidarity Committee and Students for Justice in Palestine are disciplined for violating these policies. Include the definition of anti-Semitism adopted by the state of Texas in Section 448.001 of the Texas Government Code and university free speech policies to guide university personnel and students on what constitutes anti-Semitic speech. We're reporting to the governor that we have examined our local policies and found them compliant with some clarifying language. That secondly, we're assuring them that these policies are being enforced and we're including the definition of anti-Semitism in the catalog and handbooks, Board Chairman Stephen Kaiser said. Chief of Staff Deanna Savage said the college reviewed its free speech policies and its discrimination and harassment policies. Quote, our policies all do, we believe, do establish appropriate boundaries and punishments, and we do have employee conduct rules to include expulsion and or termination, she said. If a community member is on or visiting the campus and behaves in a manner that violates the college's freedom of expression policy, it can take administrative action, including contacting Midland College Police. Quote, we find that our policies are appropriate and they do have appropriate punishments in place, Savage said. The college said there haven't been any anti-Semitic incidents reported on campus, so it hasn't had to enforce the policy. However, Midland College policies outline the possible punishments for those incidents, and the college is prepared to enforce them should it encounter anti-Semitic behavior. Midland College administration elected to put the definition of anti-Semitism outlined by the Texas Government Code in its catalog in the student handbook under Student Rights and Responsibilities and in its employee handbook under Discrimination and Harassment. Nuclear waste fight may head to top court. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. A fight to prevent high-level radioactive waste at a site near Andrews may be headed to the U.S. Supreme Court. Waste control specialists and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission have appealed to the nation's highest court regarding last year's ruling from the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals that vacated the license to receive, possess, transfer, and store up to 5,000 metric tons of spent fuel and 231.3 metric tons of greater than Class C low-level radioactive waste for 40 years on property at the existing Waste Control Specialist low-level radioactive waste disposal site. Holtec, which sought a similar license for a location in southeastern New Mexico, is expected to appeal by the deadline on June 25th. Monica Perales, in-house counsel for Fasken Oil and Ranch, said she doesn't think the Supreme Court will take up the case. She said it was disappointing that WCS is insisting on a license to store the waste. Quote, "How many times can we say no? How many ways can we say no?" she said. Tommy Taylor, Assistant General Manager of Oil and Gas Development at Fasken, agreed. Quote, "The governor of Texas opposes it. The Texas legislature opposes it. New Mexico opposes it. The Fifth Circuit opposes it," he said. He cited the opinion from the Fifth Circuit, quote, "that did such a good job of laying out the question of whether the NRC lacked authority to issue the license under the Atomic Energy Act." He also cited recent Supreme Court rulings, end quote. Perales and Taylor addressed the issue at Wednesday's luncheon meeting of the Permian Basin chapter of SIPES. Taylor told his audience that his company got involved in the issue about 6 years ago because of the proximity to Fasken's Sea Ranch in Andrews County. Quote, "And we have a lot of employees on that ranch," end quote. While Fasken had no issue with the low-level Class A, B, and C waste stored at the site and overseen by Texas regulators, greater than Class C and spent nuclear fuel pose a significant danger, he said. "Not only are there concerns about the risks involved in transporting that waste, but Taylor pointed out significant changes at the nation's southern border over the last 6 years. Quote, "We've seen illegal immigrants from China, from the Middle East. When people think of undocumented immigrants, they associate them with Mexico. That's not what's happening. People are coming from all over the world. One person detained was a known bomb maker," he told the gathering. "But as concerning is the potential impact on the Permian Basin's energy production, which Taylor noted is the most significant in the nation, perhaps the world. There are also risks to the pipelines carrying Permian Basin crude and natural gas to market, not to mention the numerous oil field service companies headquartered in Andrews that are widely used throughout the region. Fasken is in partnership with the Permian Basin land and royalty owners and others. They have a three-pronged approach to defeating efforts to bring high-level nuclear waste to the area. First is educating the public about the efforts and the potential impact, something Taylor said is critical to defeating the effort. Second is legislative action, as seen in legislation passed by both the Texas and New Mexico legislatures to ban high-level nuclear waste. Support from legislators is also important, and Taylor said Representative August Pfluger has been a strong supporter of the efforts to ban the waste. And third has been the legal challenges to the licenses. Bots and Bytes. Diamondback Energy Camps introduce kids to coding STEM careers. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. Diamondback Energy is concluding its summer STEM camp series this week, which is part of its many outreach efforts in the community. 7th and 8th grade girls from around Midland on Wednesday got hands-on with technology like robots and drones and worked right alongside Diamondback volunteers who not only guided them along the way, but demonstrated how the games they played can be parlayed into a career. The best part? Quote, "It's the aha moments for sure, and not only for the kids, but for the adults as well," said Aaron Bailey, who works in corporate affairs at Diamondback. Continuing the quote, "It's fun for the kids when their curiosity sparks and they figure out how to succeed at the challenge, and it's rewarding for our volunteers who helped get them there," end quote. The fun didn't end after the day closed, however. Each camper went home with their own mini robot that they can use to continue coding and exploring the world of technology. Diamondback Energy partnered with Opportunity Tribes and Venture Robotics to offer 3 weeks of STEM camps at First Presbyterian Church this summer for both boys and girls. This week is the final set of sessions, but Diamondback has plans to grow its STEM camps to be bigger and better in the future. Quote, "We're all about giving back and growing our own," Bailey said. "If we can get kids excited now about STEM, maybe they'll pursue a career in engineering or another technology-related field, and someday work with us at Diamondback or elsewhere in the Permian Basin. That work starts in small ways, such as at our summer camps," end quote. Rain possible today due to tropical disturbance. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. Wet weather brewing over the Brownsville area has a high chance to make its way to the Permian Basin and Big Bend areas Thursday. Out on the Gulf of Mexico, a large tropical disturbance was gaining strength Wednesday. As it heads west, it could aid in the development of showers and thunderstorms locally. The area south of Interstate 10 will see about an inch or so of rain Thursday, according to Devin Chihok, meteorologist at the National Weather Service office in Midland. The small town of Sanderson, which was devastated by a pair of tornadoes June 2nd, could potentially see up to 2 inches of precipitation, according to National Weather Service projections. Chihok said Wednesday that he expects the Midland-Odessa area to receive about 1/4 inch of rain on Thursday, and he doesn't anticipate any severe thunderstorms, so Midlanders' houses and vehicles should be safe from hail. "With rain comes risk of flooding, so be mindful when you travel," Chihok said. "Turn around, don't drown." The weather will dry up Friday and stay that way throughout the rest of the month. The National Weather Service has recorded 4.43 inches of rain so far this year, which, after Thursday's rains, should bring that total closer to the average of 5.35 inches. The high temperature Thursday is projected to be 81 degrees, with a low of 69 in the evening. The air warms up and dries up from there. Friday will be mostly sunny with a high of 89 and a low of 69. Saturday will be sunny with a high of 92 and low of 70. Sunday will see sunny skies with a high of 95 and low around 70. Here is an obituary that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, June 20th. David C. Eccleston, a cherished husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, passed away peacefully on May 26th at the age of 82. Born in 1941 in Anaconda, Montana, David was the son of Violet and Orrin Eccleston. David spent most of his professional life as a dedicated independent geologist in Midland where his passion for the earth and its resources left a lasting impact on the field and those who knew him. David was preceded in death by his son, Douglas Eccleston, whose memory he cherished deeply, and his brother, Ronald Eccleston. He is survived by his devoted wife of 61 years, Donna Hunt Eccleston, who stood by his side through life's many adventures and challenges. David's legacy lives on through his daughter, Dana Eccleston, and his daughter and son-in-law, Diana and Christopher Colton. He is also survived by several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A memorial service to celebrate David's life will be held September 30th in Buda, Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made to a charity of your choice in his memory.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, June 20th. Odessans tracking Ruidoso fires. Odessans with homes and property in Ruidoso are anxiously watching conditions as wildfires continue to ravage the area. The South Fork Fire was discovered June 17th and has grown to 15,276 acres with 0% containment, causing the loss of about 1,400 structures and forcing the evacuation of about 8,000 people, according to the Ruidoso Municipal website. It is burning on Mescalero Tribal, U.S. Forest Service land, and areas around the village of Ruidoso. The Salt Fire, also active, covers 5,557 acres on Mescalero Reservation. Both fires will be managed by a complex incident management team starting June 19th, the website said. Former Odessa City Councilman James Gowitz said they evacuated the night of June 17th. He has had a home in Ruidoso since 1981 and moved to his most recent home in Alto 3 years ago. It was bad, really bad, but luckily our home right now is still safe, Gowitz said. I'm not so worried about our home, but I'm worried about a lot of other people. We've had friends that lost their homes, not second homes, their homes, and that's bad, he added. Gowitz said it has been extremely dry there and fires can start. He has been keeping track on a couple of different apps. It's sad right now. Besides the fire, a lot of us are worried about what's going to happen with insurance because I know two different people who can't get insurance on their homes. You got to hope that you have enough money to get through it because otherwise it's going to be a mess, Gowitz said. There was rain in the forecast June 19th, which Gowitz said he hopes will help. We saw the fire start almost. We happened to be at Albertson's, walked out of Albertson's, looked up. I said, man, that's not good. That's where we always worried about a fire coming from. Hope they get that taken care of. And then just literally right then, four Indian guys ran out of the store and said, we're being evacuated. We've got to go. That's how fast it happened. Go, it said. That's how we got started. The communication has not been that good, personally, he added. He said radio station 1490 has done the best job. When Gowitz and his wife left, he said, it was so smoky you could barely see. I've been up there a long time, so I know some back roads, and we were on a back road out of Alto over to Capitan, and then we went another back road out of Capitan on the other side of the Sacramento Mountains. So where we went, we had no traffic. If you went down Highway 70, they said it was crawling 30 miles an hour. Two to three different people said it took them 2 to 4 hours, most of them about 3 hours, to make the 70-mile trip to Roswell, he said. Right down that whole valley was full of smoke, so they never got out of the smoke until they got to Roswell. The way I went, it's longer, but we had no smoke. Honestly, as my wife says, well, you pulled another go. It's, you always figure out some crazy route. We didn't have to live inside the smoke that everybody else did, Gowitz added. He remembered the Little Bear Fire in 2012 and said 5,000 to 10,000 firefighters from all over the country and almost all over the world came in to fight it. That was bad. It really never threatened Ruidoso, Goat said. It got all around the forest and Nogal and Angus and some of the little towns, but it was huge. It was a huge fire. We were there so we'd collect water and take it to the firefighters. Then they come in for that fire. It was so big and lasted so long. They evacuated at the elementary school. It looked like the military had taken over. It was huge, Goat said. This fire happened so fast, the firefighters who arrived were the ones who get there the fastest. They're mostly from New Mexico and Arizona. They're fighting fires from all over that area, so it's kind of tough. They had the helicopters running very quickly, taking water out of Grindstone Lake, but as you can see, it got away from them. They couldn't keep up. Now the big tankers are in dropping the retardant and the water. I don't know how many of each, but there's a lot of tankers flying and helicopters flying, dropping water, Goetz said. So far Wednesday morning, he'd heard 1,400 structures have burned, but at the same time, they were being told they don't know how many have burned, and it's too dangerous to get in some of the areas to count. Businessman Austin Keith also has a home in Alto. He's been watching the progress of the fires on an app called Watch Duty, and there are three blazes going. He has had a home there since 2014. This morning, one of the fires was close to his house. All of the power's cut off. I can't look at my cameras or anything. It's all sealed off. So we don't know even if we'll be able to go in or if we'll have something to go in to find. We've got to just pray for the firefighters and pray for those people who have already lost their homes and businesses up there, Keith said. He heard about the fires from an emergency contact site that Ruidoso has. They've started sending you text messages and calling you and leaving voicemails, Keith said. He said he's worried about their home, but also about all the other people and businesses that are there. It's a beautiful community, but you always worry about that. This time of year, it is an extreme fire danger because it's the driest part of the year and it's the warmest, Keith said. He added that you've got to grin and bear it, see what's going to happen and pray for the firefighters and people there. Everything's material. I heard there's been one fatality, but things are material and we can always redo things, but you can't redo that forest for a long time. Not in my lifetime, Keith said. Matt Rist, marketing director for ICA, said the hotel has been evacuated and remains closed until further notice. Our thoughts and prayers are with Ruidoso, Rist said. He added that they have special evacuee rates at the MCM Elegante Hotel in Lubbock and the MCM Fun Dome in Odessa. White House Meat Market was expecting a church to come get about 50 hams for people in the area affected. Store manager Rodney Garcia said. Horses at Ruidoso Down have been relocated to the state fairgrounds in Albuquerque, according to the Blood Horse website. Also, news reports have said Zia Park in Hobbs, New Mexico, and the Leah County Fairgrounds in Lovington have offered to stable horses. Cooler temps and rain could help corral blazes that forced thousands to flee Ruidoso. Cooler weather and the chance of rain could bring some relief, but also the risk of danger this week to firefighters battling blazes in southern New Mexico that killed one person, damaged hundreds of structures, and forced thousands to evacuate. Strong wind pushed the larger of two wildfires into the mountain village of Ruidoso, forcing residents to flee immediately with little notice Monday. Weather patterns were shifting with moisture from a tropical wave in the Gulf of Mexico. Bladen Britt Ryder of the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque said Wednesday. It will be a challenging situation going into the late afternoon and evening, said Britt Ryder, who has been an incident meteorologist at past wildfires. The potential for scattered to isolated thunderstorms could help, but it depends on where they hit. If the rain misses the fires, downward winds could cause problems for firefighters on the ground. He said rain could also lead to dangerous flash flooding in newly burned areas in the mountainous region. Ruidoso and much of the southwest has been exceedingly dry and hot this spring. Those conditions, along with strong winds, whipped flames out of control Monday and Tuesday, rapidly advancing this South Fork fire into the village, along with homes and businesses. A regional medical center and the Ruidoso Downs horse track were evacuated. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham's office confirmed one fatality as a result of the fire, but said it had no further details. About 1,400 structures have been destroyed or damaged, but it's unclear how many were homes. A flyover to provide more accurate mapping and a better assessment of damage is being organized, Lujan Grisham said. Artis Holder left Ruidoso with her two young daughters, her gas tank nearly on empty, as she prayed that they make it out safely. She was sure the house she rented in the village she grew up in is gone based on the maps she's seen so far. We were already seeing where all the fire hit. It's everywhere, she said late Tuesday, from a shelter in nearby Roswell. If there's something standing, that's awesome, but if not, we were prepared for the worst. About 1,500 horses stabled at the Ruidoso Downs racetrack were moved in a chaotic scene after authorities ordered they be evacuated for the animal safety, said horse trainer John Steinbaugh. He had his client's 42 racehorses moved Tuesday afternoon to Artesia, a city about 100 miles to the southeast, where they were stabled at the local fairgrounds. The people here have rolled out the red carpet, provided help with hay and water, said Steinbaugh. People from all over just showed up with trailers to help move the horses, taking them to ranches all over New Mexico, to Hobbs, Roswell, even El Paso, Texas. Lujan Grisham declared a countywide state of emergency that extended to the neighboring Mescalero Apache Reservation, where both fires started, and deployed National Guard troops. The declaration unlocks additional funding and resources to manage the crisis. Nationwide, wildfires have scorched more than 3,280 square miles this year, a figure higher than the 10-year averages, according to the National Interagency Fire Center. About 20 wildfires currently burning are considered large and uncontained, including blazes in California and Washington State. Lujan Grisham said the two southern New Mexico wildfires together have consumed more than 31 square miles. The exact causes of the blazes haven't been determined, but the Southwest Coordination Center listed them as human-caused. We are deploying every available resource to control these fires, she said. While many older residents call Ruidoso home year-round, the population of around 7,000 people expands to about 25,000 during the warmer months, where New Mexicans and Texans from hotter climates seek the cool of the leafy aspen trees, hiking trails, and a chance to go fishing. Nestled within the Lincoln National Forest, Ruidoso boasts nearly nearby amenities, including a casino, golf course, and ski resort operated by the Mescalero Apache tribe. Horse races at the Ruidoso Downs also draw crowds, as home to one of the sport's richest quarter horse competitions. Ruidoso residents fled Monday through traffic-clogged downtown streets, some described as apocalyptic, with smoke darkening the evening sky, embers raining down, and 100-foot flames in the distance climbing over a ridgeline. The evacuation order came so quickly that Christy Hood and her husband Richard only had time to grab their two children and two dogs. Heavy traffic turned what should have been a 15-minute drive into a harrowing 2-hour ordeal. As we were leaving, there were flames in front of me and to the side of me, said Hood, a real estate agent in Ruidoso, and all the animals were just running, charging, trying to get out. on social media post, Rio Doce officials don't mince words. Go now. Do not attempt to gather belongings or protect your home. Evacuate immediately. Jackie and Ernie Escajada evacuated Rio Doce on Monday. They said they were contacted on Tuesday by friends vacationing in Utah who said they were told their home in Rio Doce was destroyed. They lost their home, said Jackie Escajada. There's only one home standing in their whole little division that they lived in, so there are a lot of structures lost. We have no idea if we're going to have a home to go to. Public Service Company of New Mexico shut off power to part of the village due to the fire. Lujan Grisham said cell phone service was affected in some communities near the fire, and mobile cell towers were being set up to restore communications. Amid highway closures, many evacuees had to flee eastward and to the city of Roswell, 75 miles away, where hotels and shelters quickly filled. A rural gas station along the evacuation route was overrun with people and cars. DELA Express Pipeline vetted at public meeting. Project designed to relieve Permian Basin's natural gas backup. Moss Lake Partners of Houston held two informational meetings Tuesday in Odessa to unveil their multi-billion-dollar DELA Express pipeline project, on which they hope to start construction in the second quarter of 2026 and put into operation in the second or third quarter of 2028. The sessions were held from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 5 to 8 p.m. at the Lawndale Community Center in northwestern Odessa, where public interest appeared minimal as almost nobody was there except representatives of Moss Lake Partners and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which must approve the plan because it would cross the Texas-Louisiana state line in Kelso Parish after traversing 21 Texas counties. Moss Lake Senior Vice President for Regulatory, Environmental, and Government Affairs Chris Thiel of Houston said his company looks forward to completing the line because it would move 2 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas 690 miles from near Red Bluff in Loving County to Port Arthur and Moss Lake-owned Hackberry Liquefied Natural Gas Export Terminal in Cameron Parish, Louisiana. It would join the soon-to-be-open Matterhorn Express line from the Waha Hub near Cuyahoga, southwest of Odessa, to Katy, west of Houston, which didn't require FERC approval because it's inside the state. Energy industry spokesman said, the 42-inch diameter lines buried 3 to 5 feet deep in the ground will be greatly beneficial to stabilize the price of gas and get power to consumers. The DELA is named for the Delaware Basin west of Midland and Louisiana. Thiel said the 14 informational meetings his company is holding in Texas this month are to apprise the public and partially the affected landowners what the project's timeline is and what it would entail construction-wise. He said questions and comments may be submitted at 1-877-335-2397 or info@delaexpress.net. The project's website is at delaexpress.com. We started in East Texas and are working west, Thiel said, noting that the turnouts are much bigger in towns and cities where there is less familiarity with the oil and gas business. We had 180 people in Huntsville and good participation at Moody and Gatesville. The Lawndale Community Center was decked out with an array of colorful information boards saying, for example, that compressor stations would be built in the counties of Winkler, Midland, Sterling, Reynolds, Brown, Coryell, Robertson, Walker, and Liberty. FERC is scheduled to issue a draft environmental impact statement in the fourth quarter of next year after Moss Lake files a permit application in February. The final EIS will be due in the first quarter of 2026 for FERC to issue a notice to proceed and start construction in the second quarter. FERC Office of Public Participation spokesman John Percoman of Washington, D.C. told the Odessa American that his agency is required by the National Environmental Policy Act to take every possible precaution to mitigate the hazards of leaks and explosions. Percoman said FERC's role is to review the construction plans and propose sites where the line would be laid and the compressor stations built and get feedback from the public. We want to know what people's concerns are so that those may be minimized and mitigated, he said. Moss Lake Senior Vice President of Projects Eric Carmichael said, it hasn't been determined how thick the walls of the pipeline will be or what type of steel will be used, but he said his company will deal only with the most reputable engineering firms and construction companies. Obituaries. Henry Jackson Obituary. Known by many names, Cosmo Hightower Action Jackson. Too tall and a self-proclaimed Dr. Jackson, Henry Leister Jackson Jr. was born to the late Superintendent Henry Leister Jackson Sr. and Nanny Lee Jackson on February 10, 1954, and who knew from this moment on our lives would be forever changed. Henry was preceded in love by his beloved parents, Superintendent Henry Jackson Sr. and Nanny Lee Jackson, brother Robert Jackson, grandson Andre Wright Jr. He covered a lot of ground during his life, and his impact will be felt, and his story will be told again and again by those who love him, his wife of 48 years, Willie Faye Jackson, and his five children. Betty Vivian Hoover. Betty Vivian Hoover, 80 of Midland, died Sunday, June 16th in Midland. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. June 22nd at Ranchland Heights Baptist Church. Pastor Philip Rutledge officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Cruzita Queller Barrera. Cruzita Barrera Queller, 74 of Odessa, died Friday, June 14th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. June 24th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial to follow at Sunset Memorial Cemetery. Robert Thomas Bob Watson. Robert Bob Thomas Watson, 87 of Odessa, passed away on June 14th. Bob was born in Anauk, Texas on February 1, 1937 to William Franklin Watson and Hazel Watson. He is preceded in death by his wife Etta Marie Watson, both of his parents, a son, and all of his brothers and sisters. Graveside services will be at Sunset Memorial Gardens on Thursday, June 20th at 11 a.m., In lieu of flowers, the family wishes you to consider making a memorial donation to First Baptist Church, Odessa, in honor of Bob and Etta Watson. Let It Rain Fire Benefit Weekend, a celebration of community and resilience. Alpine. The friendly community of Alpine invites everyone to join in a special two-day event. The Let It Rain Alpine Fire Benefit Weekend, June 28th and June 29th. This benefit aims to raise funds for local businesses devastated by a recent downtown fire and to celebrate the unbreakable spirit of Alpine's residents. On May 26th, a fire ravaged a historic block of downtown Alpine, destroying five beloved businesses: Judy's Bread and Breakfast, Eva's Salon, Gallery on the Square, La Azteca, and Vintage Antiques and Snazzy Things. Although there were no injuries, the loss of merchandise, equipment, livelihoods, and the historic structure was considerable. In the wake of this tragedy, the people of Alpine have rallied to organize the Let It Rain Benefit Weekend. This event represents the community's determination to rebuild and support those who have lost their livelihoods. It promises to be a vibrant and heartfelt celebration, bringing together art, music, and local culture, all with the aim of lifting spirits and reaching a $30,000 goal to support those affected by the fire. The weekend will feature a variety of activities, from art exhibits and musical performances to book signings and fajita dinner fundraisers, ensuring there is something for everyone to enjoy while contributing to a meaningful cause. Friday, June 28th, 5 p.m., pop-up art show. Mingle with the artist at 5 p.m. at Tex Pop Alpine, located at 110 North 6th Street, during the Big Bend Arts Council show titled Animals, Real and Imaginary. The event gives the artists a chance to meet the public in a relaxed atmosphere. Beverages and food will be available. 6 p.m. to midnight, Let It Rain Benefit Music Fest. Enjoy a night of incredible music with 15 bands playing across two stages at Granada Theater and Alcove Social. This musical extravaganza promises a diverse lineup of bands, food and drinks. A suggested donation at the door ensures your contribution to the relief fund. Saturday, June 29th, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., American Black Bears, New Neighbors in the Big Bend. Meet author Chris Ruggia as he debuts his new book, Black Bears, New Neighbors in the Big Bend, at Front Street Books in downtown Alpine. The event features a panel of regional bear experts interviewed for the book and live artwork of animals by the author. All books and drawing sales proceeds will aid the general fire relief efforts. 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Save the Arts and Alpine Fajita Dinner Fundraiser. Join the community at the American Legion for a fajita dinner, silent auction, and live music, sponsored at Alpine's Gallery Night Incorporated, performances by local music legends including headliner Doug Moreland and friends to keep you moving on the dance floor. The silent auction runs from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. featuring items like tools from McCoy's, a battery-powered blower and weed eater from In and Out Rentals, a print from celebrated local artist Tom Curry, and an Oodad hunt worth $5,000. General information. The events at Granada Theater and Alcove Social will support the General Relief Fund. All proceeds from the American Legion event will support the 28th Gallery on the Square artist affected by the fire. Wristbands for the American Legion event Saturday, June 29th are $20 and available at Forever West Texas in Alpine, 308 East Avenue E, and during the event at Granada Theater and Alcove Social on June 28th. Limited wristbands are available, so get yours while you can. Volunteers are needed for various roles prior to and during the event. Positions include silent auction helpers, promoters, servers, and donation collectors. For more information, contact Carrie Blackmon at artwalkalpine@gmail.com or by phone at 432-294-1071. People who would like to donate to the General Relief Fund via the web can find a donation button on the Historic Alpine website. For direct donations to the Gallery on the Square artists, contact artwalkalpine@gmail.com. For those with small children, childcare will be available during both evening events. Contact kristen@alpinecommunityprojects.org for details. Fourth of July celebration, American Legion Post 430, 2701 East 8th Street has scheduled a 4th of July celebration from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. July 4th. The event will include free hamburgers and hot dogs, a watermelon eating contest, cornhole, and foam pit. Enjoy a Burger, Help a Hero. Bubba's 33 donates $1 for every Patriot burger sold. From Thursday, July 4th through Wednesday, July 31st, Bubba's 33 locations in Midland and Odessa will partner with Homes for Our Troops to raise money to help build specially adapted custom homes for severely injured post-9/11 veterans. For every Patriot burger purchased, Bubba's 33 will donate $1 to Homes for Our Troops. Donations will also be accepted for Homes for Our Troops at all locations. This year marks the 20th anniversary of Bubba's 33 and Texas Roadhouse support for Home for Our Troops. The company is proud to underwrite the full cost of the 400th specially adapted custom homes this fall. Currently under construction, the home will be donated to Marine Lance Corporal Alberto Flores, Jr. and his family in New Braunfels. Lieutenant Corporal Flores was severely injured while serving in Iraq, resulting in the amputation of his right leg below the knee. To date, Bubba's 33 and Texas Roadhouse have raised more than $2 million to help build homes. Basin PBS announces second annual West Texas Heritage Festival. The second annual West Texas Heritage Festival, a fusion of culture, returns on Saturday, October 5th at Centennial Park, Midland, 200 West Wall Street. This free, dynamic celebration running from 2 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. will once again highlight the rich cultural diversity of West Texas, culminating in a free concert by the legendary band, The Wailers, beginning at 7 p.m. This year's festival is made possible through the generous support of Midland Energy Incorporated, Abel Hanger Foundation, DMMD, and Centennial Park Midland. Their unwavering commitment to community and cultural celebration ensures that this event remains free and open to everyone. West Texas Heritage Festival, a fusion of culture, is a vibrant showcase of local talent, creativity, and tradition. From captivating performances and artisanal crafts to mouth-watering local cuisine, this festival offers a sensory feast that celebrates the best of West Texas, a news release said. Just like last year, the Basin PBS Kids Tent serves as an interactive area designed especially for children. Young attendees can embark on an educational adventure with a Heritage Passport activity. Here's how it works. 1. Pick up your Heritage Passport. Children can collect their Heritage Passport at the gate. This guide leads them on a fun and informative journey across the festival. 2. Visit booths and collect stamps. With passport in hand, kids will visit various booths to learn about different aspects of West Texas heritage. Each booth provides a unique stamp for their passport. 3. Learn and explore. At each booth, children will discover fascinating facts and stories about the region's diverse cultures. 4. Collect all stamps and win a prize. After collecting all the stamps, children can return to the Basin PBS Kids Tent to receive a special prize. We are thrilled to bring back the West Texas Heritage Festival for a second year, bigger and better, Lori Wolf, Basin PBS CEO and General Manager, said in the release. With so many cultures represented in West Texas, visitors will have the chance to learn about different countries and how they contribute to our vibrant community. With the event being free for vendors and the community, Basin PBS is providing something very special to West Texas, and with the Free Wailers concert, this is a truly an inclusive event, offering something special for every member of the family. As the sun sets, the festival will transform into a lively concert venue with a free performance by the Wailers, known worldwide for their iconic reggae music and timeless hits. The Wailers promised to deliver an unforgettable musical experience. Stay updated and share your experiences using the official event hashtag, hashtag WTX Heritage Fest. Sesame Street Live. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, will present Sesame Street Live on June 25th. The doors will open at 5 p.m. and the event will start at 6 p.m. Tickets start at $31.50. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/3p5hcxur. Juneteenth kicks off. The Black Cultural Council of Odessa kicked off Juneteenth celebrations Wednesday in Odessa. Made a federal holiday in 2021, Juneteenth celebrates June 19, 1865, when the announcement of General Order No. 3 transmitted news of the Emancipation Proclamation in Galveston, proclaiming the end of slavery in Texas. Other events continue through June 22nd in Odessa. Odessa has the largest celebration in the state. Juneteenth celebration is 5 days. Juneteenth has only been a federal holiday for 3 years, but the Black Cultural Council of Odessa has been celebrating the event for more than 2 decades. This year, the council will be celebrating the 25th year of hosting Juneteenth in Odessa, with events that will educate and honor the meaning of the day. We are committed to our past and shaping our future, Joanne Davenport Littleton said of the Black Cultural Council of Odessa. Made a federal holiday in 2021, Juneteenth celebrates June 19, 1865, when the announcement of General Order No. 3 transmitted news of the Emancipation Proclamation in Galveston, proclaiming the end of slavery in Texas. For 25 years since the founding of the Black Cultural Council of Odessa, the group has hosted the largest organized Juneteenth in Texas. If you go, June 19th, what? Black Cultural Council of Odessa's Juneteenth kickoff, noon to 1:30 p.m. at BCCO office, 1020 East Murphy Street, free. What? BCCO 25th Anniversary Reception, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. by invitation only. June 20th, what? Dallas Black Dance Theater, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue, free. What? 4th Annual All-White Party, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Odessa Marriott Hotel, 305 East 5th Street. Tickets are $50, bought in advance, $60 at the door. June 21st. What? 5th Annual Regina McKnight Volleyball Tournament, 6 p.m. at Ector College Prep Middle School, 802 West Clement Street, free. What? Juneteenth pageant at 7 p.m. at Blackshear Auditorium, 501 South Dixie Boulevard. What? Talent search at 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Woodson Park, 1020 East Murphy Street. What? Kids Corner, 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park under the yellow tents, free. What? Landon Torbett at 11 p.m. to 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park, main stage, free. June 22nd. What? 5th Annual Regina McKnight Volleyball Tournament at 9 a.m. at Ector College Prep Middle School, 802 West Clements Street, free. What? Annual Danny R. Wright Basketball Tournament at 9 a.m. at Permian High School Auditorium, free. What? Youth in the Park, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Woodson Park, free. What? Odessa Reconnect Saturday Fun Day at 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Woodson Community Center, 1010 East Murphy Street. What? Parade lineup at 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. The parade will begin at 8 p.m. at the intersection of South Dixie Boulevard and East Odessa Street. What? Hometown Heroes at 9:30 p.m. at Woodson Park, main stage. What? Kids Corner at 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park, under the yellow tents, free. What? Shiloh, 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park, main stage, free. June 23rd. What Gospel Luncheon from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at Woodson Community Center, free. What Gospel Celebration with the Reverend Mark D. Hood Sr. of Liberty Baptist Church in Tyler, Texas, at 6 p.m. at Greater St. John Baptist Church, 210 South Muskingum Avenue. What Kids Corner at 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park under the yellow tents, free. What Slack and Friends at 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park Main Stage, free.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, June 20th. Cruel words add pain to loss of companion. Dear Abby, my cat recently passed away, and it has devastated me. He was my emotional support during some of the hardest times of my life. Relationships ending, moving to different states, deaths in my family, lonely nights battling depression. My cat was my one constant source of peace and companionship. I miss him dearly. When I mentioned to some friends that I'm looking forward to reuniting with him one day in the hereafter, a religious friend scoffed and laughed. She then proceeded to tell me cats do not have souls and I shouldn't get my hopes up of ever seeing him again. I managed a small shrug and changed the subject, but on the drive home, I was depressed, thinking about what she'd said. Upon further research, I found that, according to Catholicism, she was correct, and animals do not have souls, which has made me heartbroken all over again. Should I consult a religious advisor or continue believing I'll see my cat again? I have to think that people who have no friends or family but do have beloved pets will be reunited with them. Lots of times our pets are the only family we have. Signed, Missing My Cat in Georgia. Dear Missing, your friend was insensitive to deny you the comfort of believing your soul would be reunited with that of your beloved kitty. There are many religions, and not all of them subscribe to the same philosophies. If you need reassurance, discuss this with your own religious advisor, who, I am sure, has had a similar conversation with many members of his flock. P.S. My personal philosophy is that my soul will be reunited with any soul I wish once I have shed this earthly shell. Dear Abby, I was asked to be the maid of honor in a friend's wedding. I did not consider us to be close friends, but she has no sisters and few girlfriends. She seemed desperate and told me I was the only one who could fit this role, so I obliged. Now it's my turn to be the bride. I have other girlfriends I am closer to and that I would like to ask to be my bridesmaids. I feel guilty for not returning the favor. She's invited to the wedding, but I don't want her to be in my wedding party. I also feel awkward having to tell her she isn't as close to me as the other girlfriends I want. How do I let her down gently without hurting her feelings? Signed, Not Close in the West. Dear Not Close, why are you feeling guilty? Having served as this woman's maid of honor does not obligate you to have her be part of your own wedding. A way to let her down gently would be not to mention the subject at all. If she brings it up, explain that you invited her because you want her there to share in your happiness. Period. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.